that's right. We're right here at Sharp Fast's Gallery this afternoon, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation here today because I have Jerry Stoudemire here. He owns Little Mountain Gun and Supply, and I believe you're the president, aren't you, of South Carolina Gun Owners Association?
That's correct. It's Gun Owners of South Carolina.
Gun Owners of South Carolina. Well, how are you doing today, Jerry?
I'm doing real good.
Real good. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. You know, this the gun issue is really heating up on a lot of political fronts right now, and I thought it would be interesting to have someone with the perspective to be able to tell us how things are actually shaping up and what he believes. So this morning now, you were down in Columbia, correct?
Correct. We were in the Judiciary Subcommittee hearing in the Senate for Senate Bill 308. Which is known as the restaurant carry bill.
And what does that mean?
It would, if the bill passes as it's written, it would allow concealed weapons holders to carry a concealed weapon into an establishment that served alcohol for on-premise consumption with restrictions. One of the restrictions would be you could not consume alcohol while you were carrying your concealed weapon. A second restriction, if the owner of the establishment posted it no concealable weapons, you would not be able to carry it in there.
Now, I understand this morning it went very well as far as being favorable towards the passage of this law.
Yes, the subcommittee hearing went very well. About 12 people spoke in support of the bill. I don't believe anybody spoke anything negative about the bill, including Jeff Moore from the South Carolina Sheriff's Association. He did ask for slight changes, and there was some wording change done that kind of clarified the bill, nothing that really affected it much. And it's going back to Judiciary Committee. It's moving.
So let me just ask you this, though, Jerry. You go into a restaurant, you're carrying a concealed weapon. Nobody knows that you're carrying it, right?
That's true, but concealed weapons holders are traditionally law-abiding citizens.
Oh, they are,
And
okay.
They don't break the law. That's why, you know, we're not criminals. We're the good guys.
You're the good guys. Why do you think that should be an issue? Why should that law pass? Why should that be something that should happen?
I feel that the law should pass because when you go into a place to eat with your family, possibly, you should be able to defend yourself and your family. If the place is posted, all you're doing is creating a safe haven for would-be criminals that have intent to do harm. The concealed weapons holders have no intent to do any harm to anyone.
So you're saying that it actually would make it safer?
I feel that it would be much safer for the occupants of the restaurant, for the employees of the restaurant, the owner. Anyone that would be in there, even delivery people, would be under the same regulations.
Now, you realize there's a lot of people out there, maybe not in South Carolina, that would disagree with you.
Well, I'm sure they are, and they would disagree anyway. Several states have already passed this law, and it's working perfect in those states. Several of them even allow you to consume alcohol to a certain degree, and they're still not having any problems.
Yeah, I guess the only problem you'd have is if somebody got really rowdy and drank too much, right?
We're talking about concealed weapons holders, and they don't get rowdy when they're carrying their concealed weapons.
Okay. All right. Now, since we're talking about concealed weapons, I know one of the things, aren't you a concealed weapons instructor?
Yes, I am.
And don't you, and do you also, what do you teach besides a shotgun? Let's see, what did I read here?
I teach pistols.
Pistol and
personal defense, refuse to be a victim.
Now, I'm interested in that one, refuse to be a victim. I've always tried not to be a victim in life.
I refuse to be a victim was once taught only by women. I was in one of the first instructor classes that allowed males in the class years ago. Mm-hmm. And they are now allowing males to teach. It teaches you awareness of your surroundings at home or where you travel, whatever your day-to-day activities take you to do.
Okay. It's a course basically for women?
Basically, but it works good for men too, because men tend to be complacent in what they do, just like women.
Sure. Now, I'm sure you have seen more concealed weapon permits being applied for and you're teaching more?
Yes. We've talked pretty steady all along. I had surgery back in September, so I hadn't taught since September.
Oh, okay.
And I had my first class last weekend. I had 28 students in the class with five instructors, and we had a very good class, but there's more requests for classes. People are determining they have to provide for their own defense. They can't carry a cop around all the time.
Which brings up another interesting subject is how do you feel that the cops, are they able to protect us, or owning a gun and carrying a concealed weapon or having them in your home? It's kind of what you're saying is it's almost a necessity.
I feel it's a necessity. Law enforcement can't be everywhere all the time. They do a tremendous job with the people they have, with the budgets they have, but they can't be everywhere. In the county I come from, we don't have many working at one time. And they can be anywhere in the county in probably 15 minutes. But seconds count. You can't wait 15 minutes if you have an attacker over you or your family or a home invasion at night. You need to be able to provide a deterrent right then.
You know, I'm thinking about the case that was in Congress. I'm sure you'll know which one it is, where the woman was on the phone with her husband. She had just taken, I think, a concealed weapon, and she had her children in the house, and this guy was breaking into the house. I think, was it in Georgia, maybe?
That was in Georgia, I believe. And she barricaded herself and her children in a closet.
Right.
She had a 38 Special six-shot revolver. When the assailant attempted to break in or broke in the closet with a crowbar, she fired all six shots. Doing so, the assailant was able to leave and drive off. She struck him with five of the six, which goes back to the high-capacity magazines. She'd love to have had 15.
Sure. And yeah, that doesn't amaze you. Why did this man, I mean, she had barricaded herself in the closet, right? Why didn't he just take his stuff, take what he wanted, and go? This is what I don't understand.
Criminals are intent on doing harm to people, too, not just property theft. And she, had there been two assailants, she'd really been in trouble because her gun only held six rounds.
Yeah. And still the cops weren't there, were they?
No.
I mean, that's the
she
other point.
She had dialed
yeah.
911. They actually had it over the telephone.
Right. And her husband was on the line, or he had called 911 maybe, or I don't remember. But interesting story about where we're at. You know, which brings me to my next point. Are we living in a more violent society than we did? I mean, back here in Greenwood, when I first moved here, people left their doors unlocked.
I don't believe we're living in a more violent society. I think our drug culture, our lack of discipline among youth is the major problem. But I do not believe it. Crime rates have actually, against people, have gone down for the past 13 years. We're seeing less
and less.
It's
because we need all the taxpayers we can get out there to help cover this debt.
Yes. we need more concealed weapons permit holders in every area that has passed concealed carry with limited restrictions. Crime rate against people has severely dropped, and it's been a fact in nearly every state.
And yet in Chicago
has the most restrictive gun laws, has the highest murder rate and highest crime rate in the U.S. I believe it was 605 murders last year and 43 in January of this year, yet they severely restrict law-abiding citizens' possession of firearms.
President Obama definitely seems to want gun control. He last night in his State of the Union address, of course, was saying, "Don't they deserve a vote for this for his issue?" And of course, he has all these mandates he would like to pass. What do you think the possibility of those happening?
I think on most issues there will be a vote. I'm not sure he's going to be happy with it, though. I do believe that most of our legislators are common sense legislators and not what they call common sense. Common sense gun control is not common sense. That's lack of intelligence.
Lack of intelligence, okay. So you believe that... Now, what do you feel about background checks?
We as dealers are required to do a background check on every transfer of any firearm we do. A used one, a new one, it doesn't matter. Background checks among individuals with the system we have is absolutely impossible due to the fact when the background checks were instituted, you know, naturally the NRA supported that. Mm-hmm. Well, there was no more funding added to it. They're still working with what they started with years ago. The background checks are greatly overwhelming the system now just from dealers. And I have some figures on how many guns have been transferred through background checks. Now, remember, in this state, if you have a concealed weapons permit, you don't have to have a background check. It's already been done for you.
Sure.
Over 50% of our gun sales are done with concealed weapons permits. The girl that's in charge of NICS sent out an email that said, since Black Friday, they have been transferring 115,000 guns a day.
A day?
A day.
That's since the day after Thanksgiving.
I got that email less than a month ago. And I looked at the transfers. Bear in mind, that's only half of them, according to my gun sales. So how many is that? 230,000 a day?
Wow.
Well, not all states are permit-accepted states. Just to give you some figures, from November the 30th, 1998, to December the 31st, 2011, they transferred 140,882,399.
Where are all these guns coming from, Jerry?
Well, so far... In January, they've transferred 2,495,440.
Wow.
Think of the gun sales.
Think
of the crime rate dropping while the gun sales are skyrocketing.
Then why do we keep having things like the Newtown killings and the killings that are happening at the schools across our country and theaters, et cetera?
Everybody's trying to not hurt somebody's feelings. When you have a person that you know is mentally deranged, you need to control that person and his access to any type weapon, not just a firearm, a hammer, a chainsaw, a weed eater. It doesn't matter. A weapon is a weapon.
Sure.
The weapon is in the mind of the person, not the tool they use. And I use as an example, if a carpenter puts a door in your house, and it's crooked. Do you blame his hammer and saw, or do you blame the carpenter?
Yeah, I think you blame the carpenter there, folks.
I believe the carpenter did it,
right?
Not the tool.
Yeah.
And it just happens that happens to be the tool that they were easily getting their hands on because our society has become too polite for each other. We're not penalizing people that tend to deviate from the standard.
Well, I think you're right, and mental health used to be something that was discussed. We used to have places where people could go when somebody said, I can't handle this person, or I am afraid of this person, or this type of thing. There was a solution. There doesn't seem to be that anymore.
No, and our rotating justice system is really terrible. The young man that shot the girl in Chicago that attended Obama's inauguration, he was already on probation. He had committed another crime. They failed to tell the judge he was on probation, so it wasn't revoked. Then he committed another crime, and they still failed to tell the judge. So he was still out walking the street, and he murdered the girl in the park. This person should have been incarcerated three times before then.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we are here with Jerry Stoudemeyer. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. We'll be back. Hey, if you've got a question, give us a call. He's president of Gun Owners of South Carolina. He's a lifelong resident of Little Mountain, South Carolina, and he owns his own gun store right there in Little Mountain also. So we'll be right back. Give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, we're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. I have Jerry Stoudemeyer here with us. He is president of Gun Owners of South Carolina. He owns his own gun shop. He teaches concealed weapons. He is well steeped, I guess we should say, in gun stuff. There you go, Ann. That was professional. Thank you very much. But, you know, some of the things that are out there, Jerry, there is a bill to exempt the state from the federal gun ban. What would that actually mean for the state?
Well, a lot of guns are manufactured entirely in this state. Raw materials come in, but they are machined and assembled here in this state. And actually, it looks like, according to the Constitution, they would be exempt from federal guidelines, which would include the federal registration of them. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I wish I was.
But this would mean that if it did pass, that then those guns would not have to be registered?
Well, it's passed in several other states. We're not the first with this legislation. And the federal ATF says they're going to go in and enforce the federal law anyway. Now, whether they have a leg to stand on, I don't know, and there hasn't been a court case, so we'll see, I guess.
Absolutely. It looks like it has passed, what, in Tennessee, in Arizona, Utah, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, and what's that other green state there?
Which one?
South Dakota. So that's where it has passed. And I guess they've got legislature going on pretty much all across the country on this. But talking about that, who is the largest gun maker here in South Carolina right now?
Probably FN USA. They produce the Browning and Winchester repeating arms in Columbia, South Carolina. And there are several other manufacturers, but Palmetto State Armory is now producing their own guns, but I think some of them are machined by FN, but there are other small and custom gun builders also that build guns.
Now, I was reading something, and I remember seeing that when you put your own gun together, which I think is kind of scary, but anyways, when you put your own gun together, it's exempt from
background checks. Guns, the parts may be manufactured and may travel in interstate commerce, so that would give ATF a leg to stand on.
Oh, okay.
Anything that travels interstate would be under federal guidelines.
Under federal guidelines, okay. All right, but now Remington coming down here to South Carolina. I talked to Congressman Jeff Duncan a few weeks ago, and when things were getting kind of tight in New York, he went ahead and said, why don't you come on down? What do you know about that, Jerry?
Well, probably more than I can tell, but Remington operations manager is a personal friend of mine. He and I worked together for 9 years. I actually worked for him for 9 years, and I retired. And I saw him just before Christmas. He came by my shop to visit. And I asked him, why didn't they move to South Carolina? because of the restrictive laws in New York. Some of the recent ones they passed really penalized Remington.
Sure.
And Remington is a large employer. And it would really hurt the economy in that area if they moved. But it would bless South Carolina if they moved here.
Sure.
But I just would love to see it. Their building is old. It's a four-story wood building, which is not good for machining, especially with modern CNC equipment. And I don't think it would take a lot if they had to spend a lot of money to get them to move, or I hope it wouldn't.
Absolutely. Well, there you go. You heard it right here on WCRS. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. We're going to join the news in progress. Don't you go away.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at attractive prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
All right, we're here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are right here, right now, and it is time for the continuation of Meet Me at the Diner with Jerry Studemeyer, president of South Carolina Gun Owners, and has his own shop down there in Little Mountain. He does repairs, and he says, you were telling me you wish more young people would get into the gunsmithing part. You know, we have a gunsmithing class right here at Piedmont Tech.
Yes, you have a good gunsmithing class. The problem I have with it, most of the students are older, and they're not interested in doing it for a living. They're working on their own guns, their own hobbies, and I would love to encourage younger people to get into it. All the gunsmiths I know but one are my age or older, which is real old, and our experience is going to be gone. These people need to start while they can still get the benefit of experience and training from people that have done it for years and years. And it's not a course that you can go read in a book and learn. It's a hands-on type course. It would be great. The kids would probably make a lot more money if they do it.
Yeah, as a business, as opposed to something that you just kind of, I guess in some aspects, you just kind of liked it as a hobby and it became a business?
Well, in my line of work, I worked on a lot of guns because I was a tool maker for 40 years in one day.
And 40 years in a day, okay.
I worked hobby on my own guns, my friends' guns. I received gunsmithing training from different areas and became an armorer for different gun companies. Mm-hmm. And just progress through experience. And that experience has been with me for a long time.
Sure. Now, you know, there's all kinds of laws that are out there, things that they're considering. One of the things they are considering is having a school resource officer in every school that would be armed. Jerry, what is it that you see? What do you think about what's happening? And is it all relates to a cost factor, too?
The resource officers we're paying for, they have to be law enforcement officers. They have to be well trained. They're working in a different environment than most police officers. Mm-hmm. I feel that it's very necessary to have an armed presence in all schools, not just elementary, middle school, high school. I feel like the armed presence is a deterrent for the deranged, cowardly people that are doing these shootings. Mm-hmm. They have to be cowards. If they were brave, they would attack places that people have deterrents, such as firearms or weapons or massive people. They're not doing that. They're picking on helpless sheep.
Sure.
If you become a lion, they're not going to pick on you.
Exactly. So what do you feel about it? Do you think that this is something we should have? What do you feel about the fact of having teachers with teachers or school employees with concealed weapons permits carrying in the schools?
Well, many teachers have concealed weapons permits now, but they're not allowed to carry them in the schools. I feel like if they were properly trained, properly screened, they have permits, they've had their background checked, they've been safety trained, there's still a different environment that they're going to be in. Mm. They need training. They're not there to enforce laws. They're there to prevent the violence, to protect themselves and possibly their students. They would probably need special ammo, so as it would not penetrate buildings. It would be a frangible type ammo that stopped when it hit the first assailant. It didn't continue on. I think there's a way to do it. I believe it's going to take cooperation with law enforcement and training with law enforcement and good instructors. I just don't really have an answer for it, but I do believe that all school employees would be a good idea.
Okay, so you think that, having resource officers, now there's been a lot of discussion also about curtailing how students, teachers, et cetera, access the building, really only having one way in and one way out, maybe more of a compound, I guess, type of effect.
That's not feasible. Being a fire chief, I realize that you cannot have one way in and one way out in a large building. You've got to have the prescribed exits, and they have to be unlocked from the inside. Mm-hmm. Now, most schools in our area are locked from the outside, but anyone can exit through the doors. But those doors serve as a deterrent, but they're not a positive deterrent against a madman. There's always a way in. Being a fire chief, I know that.
Absolutely. Well, and what do you think about metal detectors?
Metal detectors, I think it's a feel-good option. It's probably good to have them, but how many students carry metal that would be constantly searched? How many teachers carry metal that would be constantly searched? And it would be slow to enter the building. Mm-hmm. When I went to school, if we were going duck hunting after school, we took our guns to school and put them in the principal's office. And we picked them up after school and left and went duck hunting. Some reason that's changed a lot over the years, but we never had fights in school. If we did, they put on the heavy boxing gloves and set up a ring and let the two people take care of it. And they were the best friends when it was over with.
Don't you think we're getting a little bit too overwrought on some things? For example, when somebody makes a gun with their finger, and now they're having to go to the principal's office and they're suspended from school.
I think we're going way overboard on things like that. The people that draw a picture of one and get expelled from school, mm-hmm. That's kind of ridiculous. And I think we're trying to be too good and not hurt certain people's feelings. Everyone has to get
correct.
Along.
Yeah,
we're too politically correct.
Sure. I agree. I agree with you. I just, I can't imagine the things that we see in the news. What do you think about the internet and about all the news, the 24-hour news? Do you think those things affect people's thought processes?
Well, we have much better reporting now than we had years ago. As crimes have decreased, people are hearing more about the ones that are here. And they think that crimes are on a rise, but crimes against persons have been on a decrease for years. Murder rates have been on a decrease for years, while gun ownership has soared, literally soared.
You think we're in danger of losing our Second Amendment rights?
Not right now, I don't. I feel like we have too many people that are going to give Obama his vote, but not the one he wants. And I don't think that his hypocritical statements, you remember that he was the one that was sending, or ATF was the group sending all the guns to Mexico that we were going to find used in crimes. He got caught. So that has been kind of squashed, and all the people involved got promotions instead of being fired like they should have or being criminally charged. They were all breaking federal law and requiring the dealers out there to break federal law. And I'm sure they were enjoying the money, but they were the whistleblowers on it, the actual gun dealers.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm here with Jerry Studemeyer. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. Don't you go away. If you've got a question for Jerry, don't hesitate to pick up the phone, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We don't have Fast and Furious here, but we do have a lot of interesting information for you here today. And I have Jerry Studemeyer right here with us this afternoon. We were just kind of looking over some of the active records in the NICS index, and these were prohibited category descriptions where they actually turned down and how many people had actually applied. And is this from a certain time frame?
That's since inception of the NICS program.
Okay. How long has that program been, roughly?
I think it started in 98, if I'm not mistaken.
1998?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this was as of January 31st. Illegal, unlawful aliens, and they were applying for gun permits. Now, that doesn't
to buy guns.
To buy a gun. I mean, to buy a gun. Now, that doesn't even make sense, does it?
No, but I saw it happen in a gun shop.
Yeah?
A guy walked in, wanted to buy a handgun. They did the paperwork, called it in for a background check, and the NICS operator asked the gun dealer, can you get him to come back in about an hour? Tell him we're real busy. The dealer asked him, and he said, well, I'll just wait. And, okay, 10 minutes later, a police officer walked in with the handcuffs. He was a federal fugitive from Texas.
And he just thought he could walk into a gun shop here.
He thought he could walk into a little podunk gun shop and buy a gun.
Wow. Well, that figure right there is, 5,245,481, or 57, almost 58% of the total. And then adjudicated mental health. I'm just going to give this one right here. 2,511,593, or almost 28%. So there is something about mental health when you are applying for a gun permit?
Absolutely. And all states don't include it in their records. That's one of the problems. The state law enforcement division here would have to furnish it to the FBI for it to be on a site that they could access. I think they do fairly well here, but you have to be adjudicated. A judge has to tell you you're mentally defective.
Right. Okay. And if, let's see, what were we reading here? If somebody is forced, committed, that doesn't actually show up. Is that right? Is that what
Unless it was done by a judge.
Unless it was done by
a judge. If it's an involuntary commitment, it is, that's done by a judicial system, that is adjudicated.
So there are all kinds of reasons here, and it's an unbelievable amount of figures of people that have tried to get guns. Just unbelievable. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it because we don't have a lot of time left, but some of the other things that we wanted to cover this afternoon, what do you consider the best type of gun to own to protect your home?
I'm going to speak to you as a woman.
Okay.
What I recommend for most women is a youth model 20-gauge shotgun in a semi-auto or preferred pump action. And I recommend they shoot large birdshot in it so as to not penetrate composite walls or neighbors' homes, but yet it's very effective at a close range.
Okay. Now, what do you think about semi-automatic, automatic, this idea that they may be taking those away and not selling the ammo that can be bought in so many rounds and everything? What do you think about that, Jerry?
Well, I think about it a lot. When I grew up many, many years ago, I started quail hunting. I used my grandfather's semi-automatic shotgun that would be one of the banned shotguns. He bought it in 1912.
1912?
It's never hurt anybody, and it's hurt a lot of quail, but it never hurt a person. Those type guns would be included in Dianne Feinstein's assault weapons ban. I think it's totally ludicrous that she knows nothing of guns, yet she has the best solution to all our problems. Mm-hmm. And it's quite strange that when the Newtown, Connecticut shooting started, her bill was ready to file the next morning. It takes weeks to write bills like that. But her original bill, in the reading, prohibited us from having RPGs or hand grenades or grenade launchers and so forth that have been banned since 1934. As I said, she knows the least about it, but always has the best solution. And she waits for any incident to announce her next bill.
Now, they did away with the assault ban. There had been an assault ban, correct?
Correct, from 1994 through 2004. We had a 10-year assault ban. It covered the new sale of assault weapons and high-capacity magazines for handguns and long guns. During that period of time, nothing changed. It was actually probably more crimes committed then than there is now. Mm-hmm. And the assault weapons numbers, I don't know what they are. It's been incredible. All the manufacturers are completely out of everything. All the distributors are completely out. All the dealerships are completely out. People are buying them at a massive rate, yet no one's still getting hurt by them.
Now, at the beginning of the show, before we were on the air, you were telling me what Homeland Security was buying and buying up all the ammo.
Homeland Security let a bid for 7,000 M16 rifles. That would be either full automatic or three-round burst. And actually now, billions of rounds of ammo. And the purpose for it was for personal defense. Now, why does our government need something for personal defense that we don't own without being a Class 3 owner, which cost us a lot of money, but they need it for personal defense and don't want us to even have one semi-automatic to hunt or shoot varmints or target shoot, whatever we do.
Mm-hmm.
I can't answer that, but I sure would like to have an answer.
Sure would like to have an answer. Well, next time I have some of my people on, I'm going to have to remember that question and ask them about it.
I'd love to hear it.
They'd love to hear the answer on that. All right. So, we got about 5 more minutes here. What about, are there any other issues that are before the state right now that have to do with guns that you think we should be aware of?
There are a lot of issues. Here's a list of them laying between us.
Okay.
And different bills, some of them are nearly duplicate bills, but the South Carolina Constitutional Carry Act, which would eliminate anybody having a permit that was not otherwise prohibited, it's been up before. The sales tax exemption on firearms and home security products during that tax-exempt weekend. The restaurant carry, as I said, there are about 3 bills filed on that, and they're pretty close to the same thing. The Second Amendment Preservation Act, which would nullify the federal action. There's a bill up that would expand gun rights for nonviolent felons, white-collar felons, to be able to have a gun to hunt with, nothing else. And they could take it hunting and bring it home and hunt with it, and that's it. That's been controversial.
Why is that a bill, just out of curiosity? I mean, that a white-collar crime person should have a gun to be able to go hunting and then take it home.
The white-collar crime was not a crime against a person. It was not a crime of violence. it may have been an inadvertent crime, and usually it is, or they were either framed.
Yeah, I just find that interesting that we should put a bill up there that yeah. does that.
There's another one about storage of firearms in parking lots on any property. That's been up before. It's been fought by some of the major companies, and I really don't know why, because that only benefits them if they're properly stored. And we feel like it's a right that we already have in this state. Another one would prohibit health care providers from asking patients whether they had guns or not. And I think that's a real good one. There's one that would allow educators to have gun courses that would require them. It would be a credit course in high school that they could learn firearm safety and be able to shoot shotguns and, I believe, handguns and long guns. We do have many youth shooting teams, and some of them are associated with schools in this state, and I'm probably more aware of them than most people are because we contribute to them every year. We have in our own area.
Is that something that you can do to be able to shoot at a school?
They have a shotgun team at Newberry Academy along with the 4-H Club from the high school. Newberry Pistol Club has a junior shooting team, which I have to tell about. My co-instructor's daughter was a student that barely gets by.
Mm-hmm.
She started shooting about 2 years ago. Now she's an honor roll student, and she's also the women's state pistol champion. She won that title at the Citadel about a month ago, and she'll be representing us in the Junior Olympics in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
And she's 12 years old.
12?
Yes. She won the 22 pistol and the precision pistol, the air pistol. She won both titles, state champion.
You know, it is a great hobby, isn't it?
It's a fantastic hobby. It's a fantastic sport. Guns are a tool. Guns are not weapons. The weapon is the mind of the person that holds the tool. A hammer can be one. A crowbar can be a weapon. A ballpoint pen can be a weapon. You can't prohibit all weapons. It's the mind that you can't control.
Absolutely. Well, you know what, Jerry, as always, it's been, I guess, a couple of years since we've had you up here, but it is always a pleasure to sit down and hear all the different things going on and get all the different perspective. Thank you so much for coming up here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And if anybody would like to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch with you? Is there a good way?
It's not a good way because I'm usually working on guns and I don't answer the phone.
This is Little Mountain Gun and Supply. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Now, you can go ahead and say it. I just had to get that ID in there.
We're Little Mountain Gun and Supply. Our email address is lmgs@sc.rr.com.
Okay, all right. And if anybody needs that, we can sure give it to you right here at WCRS. We will be posting the video and, of course, the podcast on the radio on our website. Thanks so much for coming up here today, Jerry.
Thank you again.
All righty. That's going to do it for me. This is Ann Eller. Remember, this is the day before Valentine's Day. Guys, what are you doing about it? Come see me. I'll save you. That's going to do it for us. We'll be here till 6 tonight right here at Sharp Facets. Back in the morning at 10. Bye-bye, everybody.